Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And, you have time.
I was drinking, man.
Welcome, everybody, to our show. Very excited to have you here. Very excited to have you watching, whether you're over on the tube, the old YouTube, and if so, give us a little bit of a thumbs up there. We always like that. We're over here on Crowdcast. Hello to Crowdcast as well. Justin, Pete, how are you guys doing today? We didn't get to chat because Justin came in pretty hot before
coming
the show.
Coming in hot.
That's right. Coming in hot. And that means seconds from when we go live, which is responsible.
Seconds after, but yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, if you want to quibble about that. yeah, like all professionals, like professional athletes, football players, if you're, say, a Buffalo Bill, you show up right as the game starts. You run out on the field and start playing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch a lot of sports, but it's party rules, right? Like, you show up an hour late, and that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Party rules.
Party rules.
What parties are you talking about, Alex?
I haven't been to any parties in a while. We have a question here in the comments. Eduardo asks, what's Pete's shirt? I just see black. First of all, adjust the monitor, but it's a BLM Punisher shirt, right,
Pete? That's right.
No further questions.
Yeah. Jerry, I've mentioned this before on the podcast. Yeah. Jerry was trying to do something so it wasn't so, you know, the cops and Punisher.
He was redeeming the Punisher.
Trying to be like, hey, man, you know, Black Lives Matter. You know, let's not make the Punisher associated with the cops so much because they're killing black people and it's not cool.
That's right. He said it in that same voice.
Yep. He went real high at the end like that.
Yeah.
Which is when you bought the shirt, right, Pete?
Oh, hey!
What?
What?
Oh, I thought you were making a high joke, like you got high and then bought it.
Oh, yeah. No, I was not. You know what? This is going off the rails already. So I think we're going to plug a first of two guests. We have two amazing guests for you. Later in the show, we're going to have Cullen Bunn is going to be on to talk about Shadow Man from Valiant. But right now, I'm going to invite our first guest into the stream here. His name is Dan Panosian. He has a new book from Boom called An Unkindness of Ravens. We talked about on the Stack podcast, really like that
quite a bit.
So I'm very excited to chat about that. He is also the creator of Slots, a great book that we reviewed a little while back. Dan Panosian, everybody. Hello.
Hey guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you? What? Since we're talking about shirts, what does that say on your shirt? Bathorn?
Oh, that's a Bathory. Friendly black metal shirt.
Well, I love it. And as mentioned, we also really, really love the first issue of An Unkindness of Ravens. It felt, I don't want to put words in either of your mouths, Pete or Justin, but it just felt like one of the strongest debuts of the year. In my mind, kind of came out of nowhere. For anybody who hasn't checked it out, it's very close in a weird way to The Craft, but feels like there's a bunch of riffs on there, mixed with Sabrina, mixed with a couple of other mythology things, but great and fresh and original in its own right. from you, what was the inspiration? Where did it come from?
Well, it's funny. I never, I get a lot of the craft. I've been, you know, I look on the internet and I like to see the reactions of everyone, and I've never seen the craft, but I'm happy that it resonates with people on any level. So if you like the craft, all right, this is great then.
To be fair, I've also never seen the craft, but I have seen the poster, and this kind of looked like that.
Yeah. Wow. That's journalism, which is what we do here on our podcast.
Well, we did a craft, I guess, homage cover. Rossi Gifford from Canada drew this amazing cover, and he even changed the logo and everything, so it looks like it's the craft logo in a sense.
Well, so where did this come from then? This is obviously a big change from Slots, which also great, but that's a gambling, Vegas, fighting book. This is nothing like that.
No. I've just always been fascinated by cults. Maybe it's like living out here next to a Scientology cult or something. But religion, whatever you want to call it. But I just find like all cults kind of interesting, you know? We just don't know anything about them. That's why they're cults, and they're secretive. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if some of the people that escaped, you know, the Salem, in this case, it's not really Salem, but it's kind of like Salem. And there were a lot of witch trials prior to Salem. And in this case, what if some people were able to escape and they've been plotting their revenge for years and years and years, and they've kind of infiltrated different spots. You know, there's a lot of talk about like the Illuminati and like, oh my God, it's all, you know, we're all screwed. And, you know, in this sense, we have both sides of the coin, like the persecutors and the persecuted, both kind of filling up spots in authoritative positions to kind of exact their revenge in both cases.
Well, talk about the genesis of the characters as well, because you have a lot of young female characters all in high school, all getting embroiled in kind of this witchcraft stuff. Yeah. And you have two very different groups going on at the same time. So there's a lot to balance in that first issue.
Yeah, it's a lot of information, and I hope everyone can kind of stick with it. Like, it's, I don't know if have you guys seen that The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix?
Yes. Yes.
It's so cool. And that's kind of a slow, you haven't, Pete?
No, I'm scared of that kind of stuff.
Pete's scared of scary things. He watches romantic comedies. Well, like When Harry Met Sally was as scary as it gets for him.
At certain parts towards the third act, it does get pretty scary. So there is romance in there, Pete. There's lots of romance in Bly Manor.
That's what I was telling him. Yeah.
Jump right in.
All right.
it's kind of like that show, for instance, is kind of a slow burn. It's not you don't jump right in and, you know, there's ghosts at every corner and, you know, people are getting scared and, this is the same sort of story. It takes you a little while. You're on the path of the main character, and you're getting information as she gets information. What was I going to say about the?
Compared to the book, I feel like, especially with horror or scary stories in general, like the frontier, it feels like it's the layering of information and sort of like mixing genres a little bit and finding ways to be like, this is the take on a witch story, and it has all these new elements that I'm bringing to it, because we've just seen so many stories in our lives at this
point. We've seen so many different witch stories and horror stories. This story takes place. It's the first arc, and it deals with the ravens on a high school level. And you'll find that there's ravens at every stage of life. So there'll be black ravens, blue, red, and then gray, and then white, for instance. And so they just keep getting climbing up that tree. So you're going to get to the elder ravens, and obviously Scarlet in the ravens kind of represents the survivors. They've taken this spot that they survived, but really it's kind of the other way around.
We'll talk about ravens as an inspiration then. Why specifically hook into them?
why even the title?
Why those birds? There are better birds, Dad.
Why not those terrifying hummingbirds?
I know. I should have gone with that. What was I thinking? An unkindness of hummingbirds. You know how there's like a pride of lions and a pack of wolves. You know, an unkindness of ravens
It
just sounds so cool.
What about an unkindness of ducks? Those fuckers are
on. Hold on, let me write that down. That's awesome. Yeah. Series 2, An Unkindness of Ducks. Mallards.
Ooh, how do you this is something that we talk about a lot, particularly when we have folks on the show who are writing books that are set in magic worlds. But what's your take on magic? I know there's the oft-repeated line about you got to set up rules because magic can do anything. So how do you approach those rules, or do you approach it differently in this book?
Well, in this book, I want like magic and say Satanism, or, you know, the devil being a part of magic, to be two separate things. And down the road, there might be like a little bit of a crossover, just a tiny, tiny bit. But I want them to be separate. And I want these, I just don't want it empowered that way. So it always has to be dark magic. It could be like, you know, wicked magic, like from the earth, and combining stuff on a spiritual level.
How much of this do you have outlined at this point? You know, just be, you're talking about you have all these different levels of ravens, all these different places it could go. So how far potentially will it continue?
There's potentially 25 issues. There's five arcs, and each arc deals with a different group as we go forward. Now, as we go forward, some of the characters from the first series are going to cross over, obviously, into the next series. But the world keeps opening up, and as it opens up, you keep getting darker and deeper into this place called Crab's Eye. I don't. Do you, any of you live back east?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I love those names in Massachusetts. Like, you drive through Massachusetts, and the names that some of these towns have are just amazing.
Yeah, they were just like, whatever. What's around here? Oh, let's see. Murdered Bear. That's the name of the town. Let's give it another. Let's workshop this a little bit.
Wasn't a lot of workshopping.
No.
Yeah. One thing, this has nothing to do with the book, but I wanted to throw it out there. And I teased Pete about this a little bit before the show. I didn't tell him about this.
He seems to get a lot of crap.
I do. Here. Thank you for noticing, Dan.
Wow, Dan. No. Why do you think that is, Dan?
I don't know. He's a nice guy.
See? Come on.
I guess Dan's right.
correct me if I'm wrong about this, but you drew the comic book covers in Logan, right?
In the movie Logan, the covers and some of the insides, too.
Oh, man, awesome. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was a fun project. I mean, it was really weird. In this case, Fox obviously had the rights, and but Marvel didn't want to provide any comic books for them, so they had to create X-Men comics that looked like they were from the early 90s, late 80s. So I even signed my name on some of the covers, like, like something like Byrne or something like Terry Austin or something like that. It was always like a riff on those names. And then I did an entire comic book that even had like fake ads, right? Put my wife in brushing her teeth, or
nice.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that had to be fun to kind of like do the period like 90s comic.
Oh, I loved it. You know, I grew up in that era of, you know, reading comics and driving to 7-Eleven and buying my comics that way.
Where's that art now? Where are those comics now?
Well, I never even got a copy. They're just they made them. I'm sure they exist.
Oh man.
But they wanted to make them fully real, so if they got thrown or, you know, it would lay properly. And then Joe Quesada came in and penciled some beautiful pages, and I inked and colored those inside.
Wow, that's awesome. I guess we finally have a full excuse to break into Hugh Jackman's house.
Yeah, he probably got him.
We've been waiting for so long.
It's a great excuse to go back and watch Logan again. I mean, an amazing movie.
Like you need an excuse, Pete.
I want that one.
Dan,
they did such a good job with the creating those comics that when people were flashing images of those comics up on the web, people were saying, "Oh, I have that issue." And Marvel Legal apparently called up Fox and said, "You know, you weren't allowed to use real Marvel comics," and so that was, you know, pretty high praise. We were happy.
In your face.
Yeah. Gabriel Hardman worked on that movie, and he did storyboards, and he was the guy who recommended me. He was just overwhelmed with working on the movie and designing a lot of what happened. So I don't know. I got my favorite part. His job's really hard. My job was kind of easy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. I would love to see those someday. Before we let you go, though, let's go back to In Kindness of Ravens. So first issue came out about a month ago now. Presumably the second issue is coming out pretty soon. What can you tease about what's coming up forward on the book?
Well, like I said, it starts off slow, but into then some, you get lots more displaying of the powers, and everybody's motives become a little bit more clear. There's also a section in each book called The Abigail House, and that's kind of a little bit of backstory and info for each issue.
Cool.
That I end up doing some of the art chores on, so I draw those parts, and it's usually about 4 pages per issue.
Yeah,
it's so funny to hear you say it starts off slowly, because it starts, for anybody who hasn't read the issue, it starts with that Abigail House thing. You're like, all right, this takes place back in time. Okay, that's cool. And suddenly, smash, you're in the modern day. Weird things are going on. You're meeting a billion characters. By the end, there's these girls standing in the woods displaying magic. Honestly, doesn't feel slow at all.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It's just a lot of stuff to kind of cram in, so you kind of get a good picture of it. I do like the fact that, you know, right off the bat, you go, oh, this girl, she's missing a mother and a sister. Her father has a possible pill addiction, and he's got his own problem. So it's interesting to introduce all those elements, and it really helps to have like a great art team, like Mariana Ignazi, and we have a great colorist. It just the team is great, and the editors at Boom are fantastic. I mean, they're
The jump between the different art styles, I think, is so great too, because you set a tone right up top, and then you're just propelled, and all of a sudden you lean in as the art changes. It's really nice.
That's cool. Thanks. Yeah, I like that. So it gets very dark, and then you go, oh, I can breathe again. And then as the series goes, Mariana's art gets darker and darker, and the coloring gets better and better, and really takes you there. So
awesome.
I'm excited really every time they send me a PDF of the issue as it's coming along. It's kind of exciting to see it brought to life, because usually I'm used to drawing, you know, my own work.
I know I should probably know this offhand, but when does the second issue come out?
I'm guessing maybe even this Wednesday. I don't know. I hope I don't get in trouble.
Okay. I don't think it's this Wednesday.
Exactly a month, right?
Yeah, but maybe.
23rd is Friday, so maybe the 22nd.
All right. Very cool.
Nice.
Dan, congratulations. Loving the book.
Yeah,
looking forward to the second issue. And good luck with everything. We'll see you at Hugh Jackman's house.
Yeah, all right. We're all going to be there. Ocean's
Stop 4. Having so much fun, you guys.
No idea how.
Later. All right. Once again, In a Kindness of Ravens from Boom. Great book. One issue out, so you can jump right on board. Super easy to do that. No problem at all. And that's great. Pete, you're right with my Logan surprise there.
Yeah, that was a fun surprise. I'm always worried when you're like, I'm going to tell you something on the show. Because it's like, oh, if it's bad news, how am I going to handle it?
But it's usually like, hey, no more Punisher comic books, Pete. Did you hear? Well, anyway, I'm going to invite our second guest into the
Pete, would you mind giving us power of attorney so we can just deliver news to you on... we should have it at this point.
So our second guest is popping into the stream here. He's going to be writing Shadow Man coming up from Valiant Comics. It's a little delayed, but we're excited to talk about it anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, Cullen Bunn!
Hey! Hey, how are you?
Hello! Good. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So we're big fans of your work. You are Mr. Horror, I think. We've never said that out loud, but I'm going to call you Mr. Horror right now.
All my nicknames. I'll probably remember you.
Yeah. Is this, before we get into Shadow Man, is this your month? Is October your favorite month?
Yeah, probably so. I pretty much like everything about it. So, it's the month of Halloween. What's not to like?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note, you've written a lot of other things, but particularly recently, you've been writing so many different horror books with such wildly diverging premises. What draws you to that in particular? Why is it that horror is your thing right now?
You know, I think I didn't set out in the early days to be a horror writer. You know, I wanted to just tell stories. But I kind of gravitated to that over the years. And it's just a place. I think there are so many different flavors in horror fiction. There are so many different things that you can do. There are so many different, emotions you can play with. I mean, we were just talking about Bly Manor, and I saw people. You guys were just talking about Bly Manor. And I saw people saying, "Well, it's more of a romance than a horror story," and that's why not both? I feel like it's writing these stories is a way for me to kind of exercise all of these, you know, these terrible dark things and kind of deal with them on the page. And it kind of helps me cope with the, you know, the beautiful world around us.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of beautiful world around us, that room looks like a ton of fun that you're in. I'm a little worried that that, I don't know what it is, evil clown is going to come to life and stab you.
That's Sam from the movie Trick or Treat, and he only kills people in the movie. He only kills people who disrespect Halloween. So ooh. I think I'm all right.
You're safe. Yeah, you're safe. I gotta think all the action figures on the top of your bookshelf are very jealous on the few that are on the main featured portions of your.
Yeah, bookshelf. I got that. The top is like the junk shelf. It's like all the old classic stuff that I. That I'm trying to recollect, you know, that I might have had when I was a kid or that I wanted when I was a kid. And then some of the sideshow figures on the main shelf that my wife calls my adult Barbies.
No judgment. No judgment. I'm sure she's just – that's a compliment. There's a compliment in there somewhere. There must be a real fucked up toy story happening as soon as you turn off the lights in that room.
Oh, man. That's probably awesome. Judge Dredd. Really around shooting his head in the face.
Yeah. Let's talk about Shadow Man, because that has been a long time coming. It was supposed to come out back, I think, before the pandemic, and now it's coming out at some point later this year. I don't believe they've officially announced the date yet, but it is coming out relatively soon.
I think they're going to probably announce an official date sometime soon for the first issue. So,
I think I know the answer to this one, but what's it been like having to sit on this for months and months and months at this point?
You know, it's tough because, you know, when we announced this at C2E2, which was right before everything kind of got shut down in the world. And I was excited about it then. I was ready for people to read this and see it then. So now, you know, having to wait on it, it's like you get somebody a great Christmas gift and you're really excited for them to open it and you just have to keep waiting because I really think people are going to like this book. I'm excited for people to read it. People who love Shadow Man, people who've never heard of Shadow Man, I think this is going to be a great book for them. And I'm just ready for some folks to see this thing because it's a. I'm excited about the kind of story we're telling, but also John Davis Hunt and Jordy Belair are just doing some amazing things with the art. It's not gonna read like any Shadow Man book you've read before. It's gonna look completely different from any book that's on the shelf right now, and it's gonna be a lot of fun.
It feels like there's a lot of like full on horror sort of like working its way into the superhero universe. Is that something that you feel that way as well, or and why is that happening?
Well, yeah, I mean, Shadow Man's always been a character with that foot in the supernatural side of things, and he's connected to the dead side, which what a great world to explore. And I really wanted with this book to kind of he is a superhero. He's always going to be a superhero, but I really wanted to go ahead and jump with both feet into the darker horror side of this thing. And really every issue we're kind of exploring I said something about different flavors of horror. We're kind of exploring different flavors of the genre with every issue.
That's awesome.
I saw some of the preview pages that dropped in, I guess, March or whenever C2E2 was. And the creatures look wild, like you were saying, just from the art perspective. How much collaboration are you doing on that with the art team, or are you just letting them go crazy?
Well, it's a little bit about, you know, I describe the creatures in you know, my scripts. I put a good deal of detail into the descriptions of these monsters if I have, you know, if I have something very specific in mind. But I also, at the same time, I try to leave, you know, I want, with that description, I want it to inspire the art and then just let John go crazy with it. And that's exactly what, you know, what he's done. And there, I mean, the stuff you've seen so far, it's nothing compared. I mean, there are creatures coming that he designs that have three heads, and one is the head of a fly, and one is a coyote, and one is a, I mean, it is really bizarre. I mean, there are some really bizarre creatures awaiting readers in this book. And yeah, he is in it, you know, with everything he's got. and that's, you know, what you saw are just the first few pages of that book. So it really, it goes into some really crazy places.
What is your take on Shadow Man himself? You know, I mean, this is part and parcel with the Valiant universe, that every time you go to a new series, it is a very different take, a very specific take on the characters of the world as well. And you talked about the world now. So what about the character? What makes him different in this iteration?
Well, so in the previous Shadow Man series, he's always been at odds with this. Shadow Man has this Loa, this spirit that rides in him and gives him his powers. And he's always been at odds with that spirit. But at the end of the previous series, he became one with it. He accepted it and kind of merged with it. And that's going to change everything for him in terms of his sort of his power set and what his role in the world is. And the thing with Shadow Man is he's very powerful. He has a lot of supernatural abilities. He is tasked with dealing with these supernatural threats. But he's an everyday guy. You know, he's not... this isn't, you know, he isn't Doctor Strange. He's just a guy who happens to have all these supernatural abilities and responsibilities. And I think that's great for this character because it allows you to kind of go along with him as he's just, you know, encountering these things and experiencing these different horrors. You can feel that horror with him instead of him being this guy that, oh, he knows all this. He's jaded to it all. I felt like that would, eliminate some of the thrill and the fear. So some of these things he's encountering, Shadow Man can't feel fear, which is an interesting, which is interesting. He's a guy Same. Who cannot, his power, he can't be afraid. So I had to play with how do you make a scary story about characters who can't feel fear? And
yeah, and he's just like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? So,
everybody running from.
Yeah. So this is a guy who can't feel fear, ordinary fear. I got to really up the ante on him. He's got to.
Now, speaking of not feeling fear, where does your love of like horror come from? Was it like a movie you saw as a kid, or like, did you just like when somebody got scared, you started laughing and you were like, oh, this is fun?
No, you know, I get scared. I'm not the guy who laughs at scary things. I actually, you know, I get scared. I mean, yeah, I laugh, but it's a nervous reaction. You know, I'm not the guy who goes through a haunted house acting like, oh, I'm the toughest. I'm
stupid.
Yeah, this is I remember years
guys
ago.
Guys, go jump from there.
The first JC's haunted house I went to with like a big group of kids, we were all at a Halloween party and we all went to this haunted house. We had to walk down a long dirt road. And we decided, let's all be tough. And we were like chanting, we were like, raw meat, raw meat. And we got up there, and one of the monsters said, we're going to get raw meat from you. And he said it in a completely normal voice. It wasn't like he was trying to be scary. He goes, we're going to get raw meat. And it scared me so bad. I was like, oh, no. He's like, I'm sorry.
Turned it against you.
Sir,
just kidding. Cooked me.
No, I've always loved horror. I mean, I was reading horror comics from a very young age, horror fiction. I kind of got out of it for a while. And then in high school, I decided I was going to be a special effects makeup artist. So I really jumped with both feet into everything horror. And that just really, it just ignited not just my love of the movies and stuff like that, but it ignited my love of the stories because then I started reading these things. You know, I'd read in Fangoria and I'd read the book reviews and I was like, well, I got to read those books.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it just reignited it all for me.
What was your favorite like effect that you did? Did you do like an extra eyeball or just like blood running down somebody's face? Like
one time for Halloween, I did veins that were pulsing. I was trying to do a scanner thing where the veins were like coming up my face and down my arms, and they were like they were lightly pulsing, and that was pretty cool. But they fell off pretty quick too. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like a guy with dangling veins.
Loose veins. That sounds awesome though.
We got a couple of questions here in the comments, both here on Crowdcast and over on YouTube. So let me jump to those for a moment. Eduardo asks, one thing I'd be interested in, does Valiant do writer's retreats where they coordinate future storylines across the titles? I know Marvel and DC do it, but since Valiant is more based on limited series, maybe there's less of a need?
So I haven't been part of a, of a writer's retreat. I've met with the editors at conventions and other creators and the editors at conventions and things like that. And I definitely, talk to a lot of the other creative teams, and we talk about big plans and idea things we'd like to do going forward. And we run those by the editorial. I'm sure if let's say some big crossover type thing came up, then yeah, there would be some sort of meeting of the minds, but I haven't been part of one yet.
Yeah.
At Valiant.
I think you answered this already. It's over on YouTube, but YZ Hernan says, was it challenging to make Shadow Man sympathetic or understandable to the reader if he can't feel fear?
I don't think so, because like I said, I feel like I lean into the fact that he's this everyman, really. And I feel like that, even though he's not feeling fear, you're going to be afraid for the people that are around him, for the state of the world itself. And you'll be, I'm hoping the fear comes on the reader's side with this guy, this one figure is standing, if he fails, what happens? And I think I kind of drive that in issue after issue. Every issue in the initial couple of arcs is sort of a standalone story. So you could pick up issue 3 and have a complete story for yourself, or issue 2 or issue 1. There's an overarching storyline. There's something bigger at work. So as we build along, it kind of becomes a little more, you have to lean on the other issues. But I think readers will really dig that you can just jump in and enjoy it. Every issue in my mind, at least if I'm doing what I'm hoping I'm doing, you know how people, in the old days, every issue is somebody's first comic. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm really hoping for here. Every issue could be someone's first issue of Shadow Man, and they could get it and run with it and enjoy it.
That's awesome. This is from Josh. You seem to have hit just about every subgenre of horror. Do you have a particular favorite corner of horror, other than obviously the corner of horror in the corner of your room right now?
I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite. I like right now, especially, and I go through phases. Right now, I'm in this phase of fun horror. Look, I love a really dark, oppressive horror story, but that's not what I'm after right now in the stuff I'm reading and the stuff I'm watching. I want something that can be scary, but can also have a sense of fun to it. So that's why we mentioned Trick or Treat. It's a fun horror movie.
Yeah.
You think about Evil Dead 2 is a fun horror movie. So I like something maybe not just not necessarily leaning into comedy horror, although I love that genre too, but right now maybe verging that way, but something that embraces fun as well as fear.
I feel like horror comedy is tricky because you never want to be making fun of the scares or just the story.
Right.
It's a tricky line to do that sort of, so that's why I like the term fun horror.
Yeah.
And I do think that's like sort of where it's at. That's what I want to watch anyway.
Yeah, I mean, right now especially. I mean, I'm in the mood for something that I like the scares, but I don't want it to be the most oppressive thing. Now, who knows? In a few months, I'll be watching Hereditary again.
Yeah, bring me that dark shit.
Just out on loop. I don't like that movie.
The Hereditary trailer is all you need to really go dark for me.
A couple of months ago, I was jumping back and forth between episodes of Hannibal and True Detective, and it put me in the darkest mindset. It was the worst.
True Detective especially is just bleak. Yeah. It's just like, ugh, everything's horrible.
Yeah, I don't need anything bleak right now.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, on a similar topic, this is a question from Joe. Is there a style of horror you wish you would return? Like, for me, I miss Hammer horror movies.
Oh, those Hammer movies are something special, right? I mean, they really are awesome. And yeah, I'd love to see, as far as movies go, yeah, I'd love to see those Hammer horror movies come back. I mean, and the Hammer, Hammer Studios is still making movies. It's just they're not the that looks like red syrup dripping out of Dracula's mouth like I liked in the old days.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of movies, and this is a wild thing, given that Shadow Man has been delayed for months and months, and we still don't know when it's coming out. You have a movie coming out Friday in movie theaters, right?
Yeah. The Empty Man comes out on the 23rd. Yeah, so in theaters. It's based on the book I did with Boom. There are three graphic novels that I did with Boom. So yeah, it comes out in theaters. It's the comic, at least, is about a pandemic. So maybe it's a bit of prison. Oh, yeah.
What are you doing to it?
Oh my gosh! Have you seen any of the movie yet? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a, I mean, it's definitely a movie that I would say it's an inspired by kind of take on the comic. The comic, like I said, is about this sort of contagious insanity and all these different forms that it takes. And the movie kind of takes one of those elements and kind of runs with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a surreal movie.
So the politic way of saying it is you can buy The Empty Man in comic book form at stores, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you could. Well, you definitely should. I mean, it's a different story. Not going to be one where if you read the comic, you're going to go in and say, oh, this is a scene by scene remake. It's its own, you know, it's its own story. And the comic is its own story. And you can get something different out of either one of them.
Yeah. Similarly, on TV movie stuff, Jason Innocent asks, so what's up with the Six Gun movie and or TV show? We're asking all the all your favorite questions tonight, I think.
Yeah. There are things in the works. That's as close as I can get it. You know, there was a TV show filmed years ago and it didn't get picked up. But there are, you know, the wheels are turning as they always are. The wheels are turning for the Six Gun, you know, but, you know, that's about all I can say on that.
Here we go. This is from Ben the Border Collie. Any plans to work with Tyler Crook again? I loved your Harrow County. Perfect pair of art and words.
Yeah, look, I would work with Tyler anytime. And, you know, if he called me right now and said, hey, let's do a new book together, I'm immediately going to do a book. You know, we're going to do a book together. And we talked just this week about different projects we're working on and things we want to do. It's just finding the right project and finding the time on his schedule that works. You know, we just did Manor Black together. So if you haven't read that, Tyler illustrated Manor Black. And we're working on more Manor Black stuff for the future. It's a matter of timing, really. And you know, that guy's busy. He's a talented guy. He's in demand. I tried, as I do with every talented artist, I tried to beat his confidence out of him and tell him how awful he was, so he would only work with me. But it just didn't work.
I wanted to very briefly talk about Rogue Planet because we love that book.
Thank you.
One of those things that Justin, I think you were off for that episode of The Stack, but Pete and I talked about how impressive it was that you managed to bring everything together at the end of that book because there were so many seemingly wildly disparate elements. What was that balancing act like when you were crafting that and mapping that out?
Well, it's I knew how I wanted it to end. Mm-hmm. And even to the point that the pitch that I sent in to Oni Press was, you know, I ended it with, and this is, you know, I was like, this is how it ends. This is the final note. And I kind of wanted to work backwards from that. I wanted it to be a book where you read it and you're like, you start out and you're like, okay, this is like a horror science fiction movie that I've seen or story that I've read. And then I wanted to go in some really weird directions where you didn't know what the hell was going on. And then at the end, I wanted to weave it all back to this one little sort of, you know, this point. So it was fun because as I'm writing, I'm like, oh, no one's going to know what this is all. No one's going to get this. No one's going to. This is really going to mess them up, you know. So that's what, that's what I wanted to do with the book. I didn't know. At the time I was scripting it, I didn't know how well Andy and Nick would bring those weird fleshy horrors to life.
Yeah,
I mean, they really just they blew me away with the way those pages worked out.
For anybody who hasn't read the book, one of the most striking visuals in it that you're kind of hinting at here is there's these astronauts that essentially, I would call them, turn into like flesh pillars that are just going towards the sky.
Very tall.
They basically have like a gigantic fleshy antenna rising up into the sky around them.
That's great. You also have another project coming up, right? Something that you've been teasing on Twitter, something maybe that has to do with Centralia.
I can't talk about it. This is live. I can't even talk about it.
That's fine.
Yeah. So I will talk about that. Yeah. We've been teasing something today. It has something to do with Centralia, which is this, there are a dozen towns of Centralia across the United States, and some of them have very, very weird histories. And if you've been paying attention to Twitter, if you haven't, go check it out. I've kind of been talking to a number of writers, a number of horror authors. We've got something that we're cooking up together that'll launch on Halloween.
Ooh, mystery.
That's very exciting. Ooh. And Cullen, before we let you go, just to get back to Shadow Man, even though we don't necessarily have a date right now, anything else you want to tease? Anything fans can potentially look forward to as we get closer, whatever it is, to that first issue?
Yeah, so like I said, even though every issue is kind of standalone, one of the things I really wanted to do is I wanted to introduce a new villain to the Valiant universe. Mm. Now, Shadow Man, I think, already has one of the best villains in Valiant. You know, they introduced, you know, Master Dark is awesome, is probably one of the best villains. My hope is I'm going to introduce a character that will top Master Dark. I'm introducing very slowly, very deliberately, a new arch villain that I think will just be able to play in any corner of the Valiant universe once they are fully realized.
Ooh, that is a good tease. And hopefully the title will come out tomorrow and then we can read it then.
Well, that is probably not going to happen, but
gotta believe, gotta hope,
keep faith alive.
Yeah. Cullen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Congratulations on everything.
Glad to be here, guys.
Keep up doing everything, work. Man. Thank you so much, so man.
All right, and watch out. Sam moved a little bit behind you while
I saw someone over here trying to freak me out saying, did something move behind you?
I've been watching it since that person was like, it moved!
It does move. It's an anime. It's like, you know, it moves and plays music. But it's
that would have freaked out.
You would have freaked out. I'd have been just like, I would have immediately reverted to my childhood when I was trying to go in that haunted house all tough.
Yeah, it just slowly turns to the camera and says, you want some meat?
Raw meat.
That would be the last anyone ever saw of me because I would have a heart attack.
Raw meat. Right.
Cullen, have a great night. Thanks so much for coming on.
Take care.
Later.
All right. Cullen Bunn, everybody. That was the last we ever saw of him.
I almost pulled out my horror shears, but I was like, hesitant.
If there was literally any time for you to pull out the shears on this show.
I mean, you hit him with the pole. I've been burned in the past.
I really do hate that so much.
Yeah.
Why?
Your face in the shears is just too much.
Either the shears are in my face.
Terrifying.
The facial hair makes it so much creepier.
That's why I grew it, for this moment.
So just to plug his stuff again, Shadow Man coming out at some point. Valiant says that they're going to be releasing info on when it's coming out very, very soon. So take a look at their socials and stuff. Also, the Empty Man movie, surprisingly, in movie theaters this Friday. So if you could safely get to a movie theater or probably a drive-in.
Maybe risk your life for it.
I don't know.
Let's go.
But definitely buy the comic. Are we doing a road trip, Justin?
Yes, we're going to the closest movie theater
in New
Zealand.
Ooh, ooh. This episode of Comic Book Club is brought to you by Hulu's Hellstrom.
Hellstrom, that sounds scary.
Pete, it is scary. Hellstrom is about two siblings, Damon and Anna Hellstrom, who have a dark history and a complicated relationship, who use their skills and knowledge of the supernatural to help track down a powerful serial killer. Scary.
Not-
Oh, no.
No, Pete, it's okay. It's okay. The show's pretty funny sometimes, too, or at least darkly comic. The cast is great. You got Tom Austin as Damon Hellstrom, Sydney Lemon yes. as Anna Hellstrom, and Elizabeth Marvel is in it, too. And in between the chilling scares, everyone is still having a lot of fun.
Okay, phew.
At the same time, it's still not the sort of series you want to watch with the lights off. There's twists, turns, and plenty of gross scares, particularly for a hardcore horror fan like this guy.
Oh, no.
No. But really, it's all about that family drama. And some fun mysteries that will keep you guessing until the end of the season. And the good news is, all episodes are now streaming on Hulu, so you can power through and find out the answers to those mysteries right now, today.
Oh, okay, phew.
But also, it's terrifying.
Stop!
And emotional.
Okay, all right, phew.
And about how the worst demons are the ones inside of us.
There's demons inside of me?
Metaphorical demons.
Oh, no!
Hellstrom, all episodes now streaming on Hulu.
Very exciting. Thanks, most of them, for coming on. And now we're going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for that, all you need to do, which all of you have been already doing so well, if you're over on Crowdcast, drop a question and ask a question. We'll get to those. If you're over on the Tube, drop a question in the comment section and we'll get to those. We'll keep an eye on that. But let's kick it off, as we always do, with the question that nobody asked. What you drinking? Pete, what are you drinking tonight?
What you drinking?
I'm drinking a little Bacchi soda today. You know, keeping it lean.
Nice.
What kind of soda? Code red? Code black?
Pamplemousse.
Oh, Pamplemousse.
Pamplemousse. Okay. Looks like little Petey grew up this week.
What about you, Justin?
I'm drinking some Sauvignon Blanc from South Africa.
Ooh.
Blanc. Very nice. Justin's going to love this, so I'm very excited.
What poor alcohol that fell out of the ass end of a jack-o'-lantern are you drinking?
Oh, come on.
This is from 21st Amendment Brewery. It's a coffee IPA made – wait, here, where's the logo? Made with Pete's coffee.
You bastard. You snobby motherfucker.
It's actually pretty good. I'm enjoying it.
It's too much.
Kevin asked if I'm not drinking green milk. No, I'm not. I'm not. What is that a reference? Oh, right. I got this Captain Crunch, this Halloween Crunch. And the slogan on the front is, "Ghosts turn milk green." Which is almost no explanation for anything. Like, it's not the ghosts in the cereal turned milk green. Feels like it's missing a couple.
No, ghosts in general. Is cow ghosts that haunt other living cows turn their milk green.
What happened to the pumpkin whiskey?
Straight Bullet says you're supposed to be drinking pumpkin whiskey. I drank that last night, and it was great, but it's a lot. It's like if you went to a Starbucks, put your mouth under the pumpkin spice syrup container, and poured whiskey in at the same time. It's like that. So I was like,
we were like, oh, it tastes gross. But
no, it was great. My wife put it on some rice pudding.
That's lovely. When did it start tasting bad?
No. At no point did it taste bad. It tastes delicious. If you're a fan of Southern Tier Pumpkin, it tastes like that, but whiskey. So very good, but I want to take it slowly.
Cool, yeah, take it slow. Cool. Let your relationship change over time.
Yes.
Don't get it too big.
Aaron over here says, Alex, plug the scrunchies. My daughter is started a scrunchies business. However, our shop is currently closed because they all sold out very quickly. So I'll plug it again. Thank you, Aaron. I'll plug it again. But when
once
it's back
the shop opens up, yeah.
You once gotta, the shop opens up.
So you're opening a two-child sweatshop in your house, Alex?
Yeah, my children's figures are raw. Let's get to everybody's questions here because we got a bunch of them. So this is from Pablo DeMartinez. I really should have read this before.
Please, Alex, bring the questions.
Yeah, read it first, though.
It's too late. I already said we're going to read Pablo's question.
You don't have to do it.
You don't have to do that. No one knows Pablo's question.
Yeah.
Pablo's question is, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? That's not what he asked.
It's a good, if we're talking Ben and Jerry's, I'm going to have to go with American Dream Cone.
Oh, Josh says we can all see it on Crowdcast.
Just ask the question. I'm never one to shy away from a question.
Sure. Hate to go in on a political position, but what do you guys think about the situation between Ice Cube and his trying to talk to the Trump administration about the black community? First of all, Pablo, thank you for coming to our comic book show and asking.
I got to say, that is a very specific political, and pop culture.
Yeah. Pete, you're our resident rap expert. What do you think?
Yeah. Well,
slash SVU expert.
This is tough because I'm ride or die Cube, you know, and, you know, a lot of people are getting on Cube for working with the Trump campaign, but he was trying to get things done. He was trying to do something to better the black community. So I'm not going to then turn around and be like, you went to the wrong side. You shouldn't include, you know, he tried to make a difference. It didn't go the way he wanted it to. You know, Trump claimed Ice Cube, but really didn't take a lot of what he was saying, you know, just kind of cherry pick some ideas. So I don't know, man. I feel like Cube's getting a lot of shit for trying to make a difference, and it's sad to see, you know, like he tried to do something, you know. He put stuff out there. Cube is great for generating content. He wanted to see things like the Big Three and stuff like that. So he's trying. He's trying to do stuff. He's not just collecting paycheck. He's trying to do stuff. So I ain't going to be mad at him.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I know Justin and I both have really strong thoughts on this, but I think we can probably move on to another question. okay. This one is over on YouTube. Recently, 50 Cent came out in support. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. What is happening?
Could you imagine if all of our questions were about that? Like,
very.
This is from Nelson Martinez, actually, over on the tube. Submitted for the approval of the Midnight Society. Which spooky stories were better, Goosebumps or Are You Afraid of the Dark? I was a huge fan of both.
Ooh.
Hmm. Ooh. As Pete says, good people on both sides, you piece of shit. Right?
Yeah. I mean, Goosebumps meaning the books, because it was only later, was it? I definitely was a Are You Afraid of the Dark guy.
Yeah,
and I never read the Goosebumps books. I know R.L. Steinhive will come at me, but I was an Are You Afraid of the Dark guy.
I was neither. I will say Goosebumps always seemed kind of kiddie and dumb to me just from the covers, so I never really picked it up. I like scary stories to tell in the dark. That was
The scariest stories you've ever heard. There's a story in that. I think that was the name of the book.
Yeah,
and it was about a father and son who went on a fishing trip, and they went into this little weird lagoon, and then one of them, I think the dad got pulled under, the kid barely escaped, maybe it was two brothers, and then come to find out it was a flooded graveyard. That fucked me up forever.
Wow.
Man.
To get back to the question.
Yes.
This is part of the question.
This is part of the question.
Okay, all right, sure. Goosebumps to me also was a little cartoony, but we read a Goosebumps book not too long ago that was really well done as a comic. So that kind of was like, oh, maybe I was a little wrong at Goosebumps and got to go back and check it out. But yeah, Goosebumps, I don't know. I must have missed it. The Afraid of the Dark was more my thing.
You're a little older, Pete, so it makes sense. I did a report in high school about Fred Wortham and what was the book, Corruption of the Innocent?
Yeah, most people call him Frederick Wortham, but I guess you guys were friends.
Well, I did a report on him, so I was very close. And I related, because that was all about just how comic books are ruining people's, ruining children, ruining this generation, and compared it to R.L. Stein and Goosebumps and all of that, and how now it's not controversial, but comic books still carry that stigma, I think, for a lot of people. So I've done some research on Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
I hung out with R.L. Stein at a candy party once. So same thing.
Wow. Wait a second. What?
What's a candy party?
I went to a Halloween party at Dylan's.
What's
candy
a candy
bar
party, Alex? For adults?
It was supposed to be for kids. It was at a Dylan's candy bar in New York. It was for Halloween. Took my daughter there. Flex. She hung out. You could eat all the candy you wanted at the store, which was pretty amazing. And R.L. Stein was there, and he was just kind of hanging out by himself at the party. And he didn't look sad or anything, but I was like, nobody's talking to him. I've never read Goosebumps, but I'll go talk to him. And I had a very nice conversation with him for like half an hour. He was a very pleasant, funny man.
He used to hang around the UCB theater a bit. He did a bunch of shows for a time.
Yeah, that was crazy. Later on, the theater died.
Colin Bunn was talking about Centralia, and I was like, is he talking about the improv group Centralia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows Kevin.
No. Nope. The answer's no.
No, he was not. He was talking about the tire fire towns.
It's a great improv group, though.
Here, we got another political question. Let's go to that. Joe says, what,
stop, Pete? Stop asking political questions.
No, this is more on par with the comic book. Nothing against Pablo. Pablo, thank you for your question. Thank you for your question, Pablo.
I'm a very political person. I love politics. I read too much.
Yeah. What are your all thoughts on Eric Kripke's comments that, and I'm paraphrasing here, modern superheroes have an undeniable fascist underpinning to them. So the myth of the superhero taken straight, that's where it starts to become fascist because they're protecting a world that doesn't and shouldn't exist. Superheroes are inherently MAGA.
Wow.
What do you think about that? And Justin taking into consideration that he's your boss.
Not technically, but I'll take it. Okay. I think he's being a little heightened, especially because he doesn't treat all the superheroes in the Boys TV show as fascist. Homelander, I think, is Stormfront, obviously, but he finds other stories to tell in there that aren't inherently fascistic. So I think he's being a little bit pointed based coming out of the show. And as for the point when it comes to comic books, like I see that, but I don't think that's not the point of comics. So many, it's not like all comic book characters are inherently trying to use power to dominate people, and vigilanteism isn't about upholding the state or pushing a state point of view or something. For the way most comics are written, it's about sort of a person-to-person conversation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's obviously a lot of variations and a lot of different types of stories that can be told through superheroes and comic books. But for the most part, at the ideal, it's more about inspiring people. I think this is something he said elsewhere in the interview, but he was talking about the MCU movies and how it lulls people into this false sense of security of heroes coming in and saving them versus them doing anything. That's a debate they have in the movies, right? Like, and the idea of Captain America is not, thank goodness Captain America is going to save me. It's Captain America inspires you to be better on a daily basis. So you go out and do heroic things that you could do with your level of strength, which is not super soldier level strength, but it's your own level of strength. And I think that's not fascistic. That's not MAGA or anything like that. That's inspiring hope in people to help others no matter the cost.
Yeah, I also think MAGA's an even further step. MAGA is such a dime store version of fascism that is just like not based on nothing. When fascism, they had like all this other shit they were trying to do. MAGA is just like, Trump is cool. Like there's it's even flimsier than fascism in general.
Yeah, I mean, as being pointed out in the comments, there are certainly stories where superheroes are fascist. That certainly Indeed. Happens.
Frank Miller.
Think, like you were saying, Eric Kripke, he's doing The Boys. That's his point of view. He does a great job there and knows the inherent subtlety between these things. Sometimes you say things, you know, to be reactionary or make a point harder than you mean.
I've never done that.
Yeah. No, I've never done that either. I do think that it's one of those things where I like the fact that conversations like this are happening. You know what I mean? Like, it's important to look at heroes, dissect them. What's this about? Be creative, explore different ideas. That's cool. But I think, you know, it's just a blanket statement like all comics are fascists or all heroes are fascists. It's just ignoring a lot of cool, interesting things that people have done over the years. But I do think it's important that we should examine things and put them under microscopes and be like, yo, what's this really about? You know?
Yeah. But look at your comics under the microscope and see what germs are there.
And a little correction here from Adam Lawson, who points out that he must mean manga. Superheroes are inherently manga. That's fair. That makes a lot more sense.
I just hope in the next couple of weeks, every comic that comes out on the stands is going to feature every hero and villain going to the voting booth and voting.
Jesus Christ. They have that in the DC books where they're like, voting is important. And I am number one voting fan in America. But
you are the number one voting fan in America?
Yeah, this is
those
crazy
pages, too much. They're too much.
Wow. Like, shut up. Alex.
Wow.
Get out of here. Danny Ali and YouTube asks, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream for reals?
Ooh. Pizza at Americone Dream?
Yeah.
Really? That's your favorite flavor?
Is that the Stephen Colbert flavor?
Yes, it is. It's fantastic.
Wow.
It has chunks of truthiness in it, right?
Dipped in chocolate. I mean, what more do you want, man? A little caramel in there? Come on.
Pete, you're a bandwagoner. You're just jumping on these like fad flavors. Get back to the basics. Get back to real ice cream. Like, I want ice cream that's flavored like ice and cream, like they originally made. Why do you need all the chunks of shit in there?
What is your favorite flavor, Justin? Are you like, ice cream's terrible? It's like,
what are you gonna say? Like mint chocolate chip or something old timey? Like, what's up?
I like corn flavored ice cream. No, I like. if I'm being medium honest, I would say maple walnut. If I'm being fully honest, chocolate chip cookie dough.
That's pretty good. I was talking about this the other day. I don't know if this is my favorite flavor, but this is definitely a flavor I miss. Did you ever have coffee buzz 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 for Ben and Jerry's?
Get the fuck out of here. What is it with you? I feel like you're trolling me. You're like, I drink this coffee flavored beer, pumpkin whiskey. Oh, my favorite thing, coffee buzz buzz buzz. Hi, bye bye. I'm a dude.
It was a coffee ice cream with mocha chunks and chocolate covered espresso beans in it.
Yeah.
And I believe they discontinued it because it was just too much. You'd eat it and just be like,
eventually, Alex, you're going to pull off this clear mask and reveal that you're Jubilee from the X-Men 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
Oh,
like
God.
A mall rat.
I wish. But yeah, generally coffee ice cream, which Aaron is pointing out of the
on the escalator.
Aaron is pointing out coffee ice cream is sold, man. I don't care. It's delicious. It's delicious, yeah. Aaron.
I like ice cream that's flavored with responsibility and paying your taxes.
Wow. Ben the Border Collie says, any movie, TV show, comic that scared you as a kid that seems ludicrous now, mine is Tom Cruise movie Legend. Couldn't watch past the first 10 minutes. That's a good choice. That is a pretty fucked up movie. But for you guys, any movie from your childhood that seems silly in retrospect?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit when he took up the thing and it had the cartoon eyes? That freaked me the fuck out.
Mm. But now you think it's stupid?
Yeah, now I'm like,
No, that was legit scary. That movie was just unsettling in general because of humans and cartoons.
Yeah, and I just saw Cool World, and I was like, what is going on?
Mm, so there's a lot of sex and violence happening for you. No wonder you're so weird about sexual comic books.
Yeah, exactly.
You're mixed up. Well, one thing, I love the movie The Rocketeer, but something that bothers me about from now, since I realized this till today, is there's a point in the movie where they are in the bottom of a blimp, and then they eventually get to the top of the blimp and they crawl out of a hatch in the top of the blimp as if to say they crawled through the hydrogen on like a ladder and then they get out of the hatch in the top of the blimp. And ever since I thought of that, I was like, fuck. Bumps me out.
Man. I feel like most of the things that totally freaked me out as a kid are from scary movies. The two that I'm thinking about offhand, which I'm sure I've talked about on the show before, but I walked in on my parents watching Poltergeist exactly the moment when sentence was going to go a different way.
Sex and watching Poltergeist. No wonder you're scared of it.
And I always think about ghosts whenever I have sex from now on. No, the... The clown. Yes, Joe calls it the clown scene.
But Joe typed that just as you said it was kind of.
Yeah,
crazy.
The clown scene. Just as that happened, that freaked me out. Obviously, I'm over it because I married a clown, but that was terrifying at the time.
Or is that why you married a clown?
Yeah, exactly.
You've been chasing clowns ever since. Because you're walking your parents watching a scary movie. Clown.
I'm over it.
It's like TLC said, don't go chasing clowns. Stick to the circuses and carnivals you're used to. You know?
Yeah,
it's
true.
Nice.
Alex, you walked into your parents having sex in clown makeup, and you've never been able to let me say the thing that I was scared about, and I think I've talked about this, is the movie Nothing But Trouble.
Sorry, Aaron. Aaron wrote, what if you married that clown?
That clown, yeah.
I'm still not sure.
That's going to be a great late life reveal.
Yeah.
Alex, I'm that clown.
Oh, no. All right, plenty more questions here. Here's one. We keep going back and forth between ridiculous questions and political questions. But Michael Vinoy on Tube says, have you voted early? That's not the point of the show. Pete, you voted?
Oh, yeah, voted early, man.
Wait, are you Pete? A Pennsylvania voter now?
Oh, yeah, bro.
Fuck yes. Yeah, that's great, Pete. That's a huge vote.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited for your
vote. Gosh, I'm glad you voted today. Joe, nice
Joe.
Work.
Nice. Early voting starts here this weekend, October 24th, and I am very excited to do it on that day.
Yeah, me too. I was going to do an absentee ballot, but I was one of the Brooklyn voters who got sent the wrong ballot. So instead, I'm going to do the early voting in person. Highly recommend. A lot of people, in case you're listening, in case you haven't voted already, in case you haven't made a plan, I know that's not the point of this podcast. Make a plan and then make a backup plan, particularly with mailing in votes because the Postal Service is so slow right now. You got to get it out right now as quickly as possible because it may take a while. But if you can do in-person safely, do in-person safely. That's the way to go.
I truly love the process of voting. In my neighborhood here in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, for the primaries, there were so many poll workers there. There weren't a ton of people. But person next to me was 18 or 19. And they said first time voter and everyone applauded in the room. It was so cool. I loved it. And I am so excited for this election. And people are voting like crazy. Mm-hmm. I read today the number of votes in Texas is already more than Trump got total in 2016.
Wow.
I read that on Twitter, so I hope it's true. But that's exciting. Florida voting is so good, and to get mildly political, it's highly Democrat focused. Mm-hmm. It's so exciting. I'm so happy.
It's great. And I see everybody here in the comments is saying that they voted already, which is awesome. So
way
if
to
you haven't,
be.
Get on it. Way to be, everybody. This is from Kevin. What are some of your favorite aspects of comics as a medium for horror? What do you think they can do in a way other media may not?
Great question.
Yeah, just to jump in here, we've talked about this on the show quite a bit, particularly in terms of Lock and Key, that it's hard to do horror because your eyes can skip forward on the panels, so you can't really have those jump scares. The reason we talk about that with Lock and Key is that's something Gabriel Rodriguez and Joe Hill, of course, when he's planning out the comic, do particularly well, is they pace for those scares. What else? What do you think specifically? Because that's sort of like a roundabout way of answering it.
Well, I do think pacing is the part that's really that comics can really manage well. In a horror movie, like, oh, I missed it. Wait, what was that? Like, I heard the noise, and then it's just sometimes even the classic
you missed it because you're usually looking at your phone instead of watching the screen.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like there are moments where you can be just out of joint with the way the story is being told, and with comic books, the panels allow the pacing to be very specific and controlled, and I think that helps a lot. Also, artistically, like I think the Hulk book that Al Ewing does is such a good example of this. The horror, the art allows you to just stretch and play in a frozen panel in a way that horror movies just don't do. Horror movies always move so quickly, and if you can really achieve horror in a comic book where it's a still image, like then you've got a hit on your hands.
Yeah, I think the key is drawing the audience in, because for a horror comic to really work, you've got to be hanging on each panel to panel. So like finding a way to connect to that audience and have them really kind of sucked into this world, and the art is a huge part of that. And you've got to kind of feel like you're right there with it. And yeah, I mean, Gabriel Rodriguez kills it in that aspect and kind of brings you along for this ride.
And there's also the answer to the question that artists absolutely hate, but I still think is kind of true, is the no budget in comics thing, where, you know, at a certain point, at a certain level of horror movie, there's only so much you can do with the monster. In comics, you can make them look however you want, which is kind of great. You can have a flesh antenna going all the way up to the sky, and it doesn't cost anything extra necessarily.
Yeah, because in real life, you have to actually just have that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They had to build that for, what was it?
AT&T. They had flesh towers first. Yes. They started with flesh towers first.
That's a conspiracy theory that Pete believes in.
Yeah.
5G's flesh towers.
Question for the tube from Scott Carpenter. Did you guys already talk about DC Future Slate? I have no idea what it is.
I just want to interrupt. I thought it was Scott Carpenter going to ask a question about his dad, John Carpenter, which, Scott, your dad does amazing work. You know, much respect to the family.
Yeah, also the shout out to the original Carpenter, Jesus.
Wow. OG shout out right there.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've got a couple of old This Old House episodes featuring Jesus, and he, what a renovator.
I think incredible. It's pronounced Jesus. Okay, you're saying that.
Okay.
That's 100%.
Okay. But back to the question, DC Future Slate. Have you guys read about this one yet? Have you heard about this one? Well, so this is
what are you, a stand-up comedian over here?
DC.
Night? Hey, DC, you heard about this?
Oh, they got 52 worlds. 52 worlds. Have you heard about this? So DC Future Slate. Future Slate. I don't know if this is blowing up your spot, Pete, on what's coming on during trivia about comic book news. I don't want
to. I think you mean topical comic book news. And don't worry. Don't worry, Pete's topical news, it always hits a certain mark.
Future Slate is the thing that's coming after Dark Knight's death metal. It flashes forward, I honestly don't remember how many years, but a couple of years into the future to show the future of the DC universe. So new heroes have taken up the mantles. Everybody is in a different place. And that's going to be the entire line for 2 months is going to be like that, taking place in this future after death metal. I haven't honestly read too much beyond about that, but it certainly seems like one of those line-wide things that DC does to kind of give them a chance to jump in and get caught up on the schedule on whatever is next. So I don't think it's going to be the permanent status quo. Maybe they'll take some elements and weave them back into the main DC universe. But for the most part, it's going to go forward with new creative teams after, I believe it launches in January, so March. Pete, Pete, I'm boring.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it's 8/12.
March, maybe, yeah.
Sorry, Pete. Anyway, that's what I know about it.
So. Never apologize. That was good. That was good news.
Yeah. Thanks. We're journalists.
We're journalists. No, I like yawning journalists. I like when DC does events like this. DC 1 million, I really enjoyed. I think that was a good event, and then it allowed the creative teams to take something, an outside influence or an outside sort of, it's like a suggestion at an improv show with your beloved Centralia, Pete. I'll weave that into the story, change up the story. Or another team could just like sort of push into a whole different place. And that's what I hope this does.
Here's a question from a Crowdcast from Hollywood Homer. Would you take Compound V or give it to your children?
Wow.
That's for you guys.
I'd have a sip.
Yeah.
Just like,
give me a sip.
Just a little sippy poo.
On A through U, give me V.
Yes, absolutely. I've dreamed my entire life of having superpowers. I'd absolutely take Compound V.
Would you give it to your kids, though?
Not unknowingly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't accidentally give it to them, is what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't do it without their knowledge.
Nice.
Okay. So after you've like flown around for a little bit and then come back down to Earth and you're like, hey, kids, you want to try this?
Yeah. Or I'd wait until they were, you know, legally adults and then they could make their own decisions about that sort of thing. Wow. That seems that's a more responsible way of treating.
Alex, just think how many scrunchies they could crank out if they had superpowers.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is Galvin very
scrunchies, big bucks.
Man, I could be making, I mean, she could be making a lot more money. Eduardo says, with the new Mandalorian season coming up soon, I'm surprised there's no spinoff series yet. In that absence, any favorite Star Wars comics that capture that same style of exploring dark corners of the universe?
Mando! I think the Darth Vader comic was very good. I don't really want to see that TV series very badly, but... it is weird. We're not to get into a whole Star Wars conversation, but it is weird where Star Wars is right now. It's really just Mandalorian and then a series of rumors, which is crazy in light of Marvel. Any other like established and working huge IP or major franchise, Star Wars is sort of in a place where it feels like, we fucked up a little bit recently and we don't quite know where to go. Mandalorian worked. We greenlit that before we fucked up, and so now we're going to do that until we can't. But they have to. There've been a bunch of other TV show announcements, but they seem far away, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's the Obi-Wan
show. Galaxy far away.
What? Nice one, Pete.
Pete just fell asleep. He woke up and said that.
Apropos of absolutely nothing.
Galaxy far away.
Drop down, girl. So there's the Obi-Wan series, which had some rumors of conflict behind the scenes. We don't know whether that's true or not. Certainly Ewan McGregor was like, it's fine. We're just working on some stuff. Yeah, pay no attention. But they... the thing... Oh, I'm waiting. Justin just walked away. I actually had a point to make to him. I don't know where he went.
Too bad.
He's got to go. Oh, here he is. He's back again. So, Justin, I wanted to say specifically to you, I don't know if you read about this or know about this. Have you heard about this? Have you read about this?
Justin, you know about this?
But
what is the deal
I do
with?
Think like a little bit of a wrinkle on the whole Star Wars isn't exactly working thing is the news that came out today that Lucasfilm is doing their first non-Star Wars thing since 2015, which is a Willow sequel series on Disney Plus with Warwick Davis and Ron Howard on board. John M. Chu is going to be directing it.
Hey, are you fucking with me right now?
I'm 100% not fucking with you.
Because I have not heard this.
Yeah.
Did you not read the email? It was in the email, bro.
A sequel to Willow?
A sequel to Willow.
Okay.
Willow.
And in this sequel,
the
can
TV
you feed
series?
Can you feed a baby black root?
Yes. It's weird. That wasn't in the press release, but I assume so, yeah.
Is Mad Mardigan great in this sequel?
They didn't say anything about Val Kilmer, which was my first question. But I assume if they could somehow get Val Kilmer back, they will.
If it's going to be pushed off into the future, and we're going to feel the repercussions of the disappearing pig trick, and Bav Morda will perhaps return from a dimension that is very far away. The two-headed dragon will maybe come back for a little bit of revenge. I'm here for it.
Yeah, but I do think, pursuant to the Star Wars discussion, it is pretty telling that their next announcement was not, here's our next Star Wars series, or here's how we're doing on any of the series that we've said you have in development, that it's instead they're pivoting to another Lucasfilm property and going ahead with Willow.
I mean, let me just say, Star Wars is definitely in bad shape if they're like, let's pivot to Willow. That's how you know they fucked up, when they're like, oh, shit, let's pivot to this movie that was not popular when it came out, but a couple of random people love it.
There is, though, John M. Chu, and he did say this, on Twitter, he named his daughter Willow because he's such a big fan of Willow. So he at least seems like the right guy to take it on.
I threw the name out with my children. Kaya, also, great name.
Yeah.
Allura, sure. No shame in that.
Ooh, wow.
I may have suggested Kitty for my daughter.
Oh, come on, man. That's awful.
That's cool.
Here we go. All right, I'm reading through questions now. I'm vetting them. This is from Mike Benecke. If you hit your head on a hike and couldn't really travel out of foot, what national park would you prefer to be in? Wait, I didn't vet that at all. What is that a reference?
It's crazy who bragged about vetting a question. You bragged about vetting a question. And then you asked a question that is wildly unrelated. And I'll tell you what, I love this question.
I'll tell you, you know what it is? I vetted the other question. I was like, I don't know about these. But this one, I did read.
Yeah, nice.
What is this a reference to?
I don't know if you know how vetting works. You don't just do it once and then see what happens.
That's how we got this president.
That's exactly right.
Oh, boy.
So which park would we want to bump our head in and then try to get out?
National park would you prefer to bump your head in?
I'm going
to
say Enchanted Forest Water Safari. That's, where the fun never stops.
That is – you've been lied to by your parents if you think that's a national park. but you know I love that Enchanted Forest Water Safari, and the fun truly never stops there. And that is a water park in upstate New York that is barely a thing.
Yeah, barely a thing.
There's like two
just to follow up on what Pete's saying, I would say Dorney Park is the national park that I would like to hit my head in.
Is that, that's another amusement park, right?
That's another water park, yeah.
Nice.
I could get my way around Adirondack Park if I bump my head.
Yeah.
Nice. Great question. Here, I'm going to go vet some
the
more
desert. I would be bad in the desert. I don't like heat.
Yeah. All right. You know what? I think we're going to wrap up these questions here.
Are they all just politics?
No. They're various things. They're all great questions, and you're all great if you ask them. But I do think we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
The star of trivia.
Here we go. All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience.
Now, Pete, before you go any further, I just have one quick question. The trivia always focuses on topical comic news, making you sort of our news arm or a news organization within Comic Book Club. Wow, have you considered an endorsement for the presidency? What's the Pete endorsement? Exactly. Pete is the true journalist of Comic Book Club.
I don't know what you're getting at. I think we all know who I'm voting for. So
is it Joe Jorgensen?
Yes. Yeah. All right, here we go.
So you can't write in sucking on a cheesesteak.
Can't you,
that's
though?
That's not
can't you?
This presidential election 2020, vote for
sucking on a cheesesteak.
That's right. VP Frank Castle.
That's what a
VP
ticket.
White Castle.
Oh! Alex Byrne.
Oh, man.
I'm going for Halloween as sucking on a cheesesteak. My costume is confusing.
I'm going to go with White Castle. All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news. Pablo did have his hand up. He was first hand up guy. If we want to, but I don't know if you want to check the tube first or.
No, we haven't had anybody on the tube. I invited Pablo into the stream, so we'll see if he comes on in here to challenge you once again on your political knowledge and topical comic book news.
Yeah. Sweet.
All your questions are about Ice Cube's political point of view, right?
Yeah. Every single one of them.
Nice. Will he show up? Will he show up to this debate?
I don't know. Sometimes he has internet issues, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I guess
you can always answer in the comments.
Hey, Pablo, new locale for Pablo.
Oh man, okay. Pablo, great to see you. I'm going to read you a question. Listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 will be yours, Pablo, in the form of the gift card to Midtown Comics Online.
I'll do my best, sir.
All right. Question number one. What comic book streaming service says it will stream new comics 3 months earlier? Is it A, Comixology, B, Marvel Unlimited, or is it C, Kathy Baker? So it's going to be A, or it's going to be B.
It's going to be B.
That's right.
It's
going to
be
nice.
A.
Yeah, nice, Pablo. Flexing the pipes. Love it. Question number two. this quarter has reported a 42% increase in graphic novel sales in bookstores in which continent? Is it A, Europe, B, North America, or is it C, Bob Odenkirk? So it's either A or it's B, and you're closer to $25.
It's going to be B.
That's right. All right.
Pablo, working confidently through this quiz.
North America, 42% increase in graphic novel sales. I like the sound of that. Last one. Here we go. Question three. Sci-fi meets pro wrestling in what new Kickstarter comic? Is it A, Mother Trucker, B, Jacked in Space, or is it C, Brandon Hurt? So it's either A, and $25 will be yours, or you will be completely wrong and win nothing.
I'm going to win something because it's A.
Yeah!
Pablo, you've done it again.
Nice good work, job, sir. Pablo. Great to see you.
Congratulations. You won a $20 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we'll get it right after you. Thanks so much.
You're looking good, Pablo. You look like you've lost some weight. You feel fresh. It's great to see you.
He's gone.
Okay. Well, just throwing a compliment out.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day.
I'm just saying, in case people are wondering, the Robin Williams movie is Boulevard.
Oh.
Boulevard. Great.
Wow, really scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
Yeah, let me know when you start just fully making these up.
Okay, I'll let you know.
As we all know, tomorrow's New Comic Book Day. What are you all looking forward to, Pete? Kick it off.
I am looking forward to Something is Killing the Children, number 11, as well as the next Umbrella Academy book, You Look Like Death.
Interesting. What about you, Justin?
Well, there's a lot of fun stuff coming out tomorrow. New Rick Remender book called Scumbag coming out. Very excited to check that out. And got to get up for Black Magic, another book I really like by Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott.
I'm excited for Chilling Adventures of Sabrina presents Madam Satan, number one. This is a fun thing that Archie Comics is doing now, where they're releasing these one-shots that like kind of tie into their TV shows but don't necessarily contradict the continuity, which feels like a very smart thing to be doing right now. And Madam Satan, of course, great character, so that should be a lot of fun. And of course, all of those are going to be reviews and many, many more in our Stack podcast that goes up at the Comic Book Club feed and the Stack feed at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, so definitely check that out. And folks, I think that's it for our show. First of all, we want to thank our amazing guests for coming on the show. We want to thank Dan Panosian. Check out An Unkindness of Ravens from Boom Studios.
Great book.
Cullen Bunn doing the upcoming run on Shadow Man coming out from Valiant Comics. Stay tuned for more info on that. Also, next week, we're going to have two other great guests are going to be on the show. Francois Vignol from Oni Press's Titan is going to be here, as well as T.E. Marshall from In Teddy We Trust, which is basically a killer Teddy Roosevelt teddy bear comic. So Pete's going to be all in on that one, I'm sure. Also, if you want to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have our Umbrella Academy podcast. Umbrella Podcademy is ongoing right now. New episodes.
Very fun episode coming out. Episode two was a wild one for this.
Yes, we were a little loose. Not like this show where we're all locked up. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to this show. Comicbookclublive.com for this show and more at Comic Book Live on Twitter. Until next time, everybody. Have a good week. Remember to vote or register to vote. You're awesome.
Next week will be our scary show. Haunted Halloween-esque show, perhaps.
Terrifying. So grab your grim hand.